the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.
Greetings. This is your host for Education Now, Athena Melville. In this August 16th edition of Education Now, I am pleased to share an interview with Kip Dawson. Kip was raised in Berkeley, California, became an activist, and is now a public school teacher in Pittsburgh. During our dialogue, Kip shared reflections on the American Federation of Teachers Conference held in Detroit, Michigan, this past July 27th through the 30th. Kip, a middle school English teacher in the Pittsburgh Public Schools, is a member of the executive board of the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers. Prior to teaching, she worked for 13 years as an underground coal miner and was active in the United Mine Workers of America. She has a very long history as a social justice activist, beginning as a high school student in the civil rights movement. She credits her Rosie the Riveter mother with getting her started on this path, which has brought her great joy, and as she put it, has wound up approximately in her role as a teacher and activist in support of her students, public education, and justice for the 99%. So now we go to the interview. And I will be back after the interview with a list of organizations that purport to support child-centered education, but truly serve the deformers of public education today, as well as some contact information. So, away we go. Hello, Kip Dawson.
Hello.
I am so delighted to have you as a guest on Education Now.
It's my pleasure and honor. Thank you.
I have told the listeners about you in the introduction to this interview. So they know you're a public school teacher in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And that you went to California University in Berkeley.
Well, actually, I grew up in Berkeley, but I went to San Francisco State College. It was before it was a university. I went to Berkeley High School. But on to San Francisco State.
All right. And what more can you tell us about your teaching career?
Well, my teaching career is like my fourth or fifth career. I'm 67 years old. I've only been teaching actually for about 20 years. Prior to that, I was an underground coal miner for 13 years. And when we got laid off from the United Mine Workers Coal Mines, there was a provision in our contract that helped to pay for us going back to school to be retrained. And I had almost finished a college career back in the 60s in San Francisco, or not career, but a college education. And I had always wanted to teach. So this layoff turned into a propitious thing for me, and I was able to become a teacher in my 50s, and I love it.
Oh, that's so
good. Almost my 50s. I'm very happy to be a teacher. I teach middle school in Pittsburgh Public Schools. Again, not what I originally intended, but boy, am I lucky that I ended up there. I love teaching middle school. And I'm very involved in our union, the American Federation of Teachers, the local chapter in Pittsburgh. I'm on the executive board there. And I've led a very activist life, which is, under today's circumstances facing public education, a real blessing, because boy, are we in a situation where we need that kind of history and that kind of perspective
Yes,
that comes from political activism.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's so impressive that you work in the coal mines. I mean, my father worked in the coal mines.
Where was that?
That was in southern Utah.
Uh-huh.
Years ago, of course, you know, there were so many Greek immigrants ended up in the mines in Utah. And so I've heard his stories. And even though he eventually had a business of his own, he never stopped being a member of the unions.
Oh, well, that was so important. I was very lucky to be involved not only in the United Mine Workers during some of the biggest struggles of all of the 1980s, but also in an organization of women coal miners, which was a hardcore union bunch of women from all over the country, including Utah. So I have actually visited the Utah coal mining areas because our women miners organization had conferences in every year, and we would have one in different coal mining areas every year, and one of them was in Price, Utah.
Right, Price, that's exactly, Helper and Price.
Yes, Helper and Price, right.
You hit the nail right on the head.
But the work that the United Mine Workers did to organize families to support the coal miners and the unions, that is so germane to what we're facing right now in education, because I'm sure that no teacher would disagree that the only way that we're going to be able to save public education from the attacks that it's under right now is if we work really closely with the parents of our students and with the communities in which we are living and working so that we can have an effective alliance that is strong enough to stand up to all the powers that are coming down against public education now. So I think frequently, actually, I get visual images of standing outside the jails where striking coal miners were, along with miners' wives, singing Amazing Grace and Solidarity Forever as we worked to get those coal miners out of jail. I feel similarly as we're standing outside closed school buildings or working as we did last week with our brothers and sisters in Detroit to try and get even negotiations to happen as to the future of Detroit schools. It's a very similar sense that I get about what we're in right now.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and it's going to be a struggle. I know that, but I think there's great momentum behind it, Kip. And so
yes.
I have hope. I really do have hope. So I want our listeners to know that Kip has been to the AFT, American Federation of Teachers Conference, in Detroit this past July 27th through the 30th. And so I would like us to spend time talking about your experience at the AFT conference.
That sounds great.
Where should we start?
Well, actually, 24 hours ago, I would have been talking with you from Detroit because I just got back. The conference, I think the thing that's most outstanding to me about what happened in Detroit over the days that you mentioned is that all of us who were there got a sense of two things undeniably strongly. One was the depth of the attacks on public education and the facts that most of what each of us is facing in our own local areas has already been faced by or is about to be faced by other schools in other parts of the country, and sometimes worse than what we have had to face. But the other side of it, and this gets back to what you were saying, is the tremendous momentum among teachers and supporters of public education of all kinds, and that's one thing I'd like to say a little bit more about, that it exists out there. And our most successful struggles right now to support public education are those that have recognized and embraced and helped to build the solidarity with the other people who really care about public education. And you know what? That's really a lot of people and a lot of organizations.
Yes, it is a lot of people and a lot of organizations. And it's just, will they get the press? I have been so disappointed in the mainstream media, even in the public public platforms like NPR and PBS, that they have not, you know, those, that's a public airwaves, and they have not used that platform to bring these issues, the truth of these issues, to the public. I just find that so outrageous.
It's almost, one could become a conspiratorialist without too much exaggeration in looking at what the media does and doesn't say about public education. For example, yesterday morning, the day before, Joe Biden came to speak to our convention, and he got a good response, but the biggest things that happened there, the tremendous show of solidarity behind our colleagues who are already on the front lines in Chicago and Detroit and other places. I mean, it's incredible ovations of thousands of teachers determined with the spirit that you touch one of us, you touch all of us. We've got to stick together from California to everywhere.
Right.
And then
from California to the New York Island.
That's right. Right. The Wall Street offices and, yes, and the Redwood Forest.
That's
exactly
right.
But this incredible support to a young dream activist who spoke there, a really wonderful young woman who had been among those who had walked across the country in support of the Dream
Act. The Dream Act.
Yes, for undocumented children. Having a chance to go to school, and a tremendous amount of support for our colleagues in southern West Virginia, where the poverty rate is so huge. The determination that was expressed there to help our Detroit brothers and sisters force Ron Emanuel and the city there to talk to them and not just close schools and shut down labor contracts, and the same incredible solidarity behind our Chicago brothers and sisters who have already won some victories because of the incredible, I keep using that word, but momentum behind them. None of this stuff really made the press. In fact, we were sitting around yesterday morning looking at USA Today, and there is a front page article about education in yesterday's USA Today. What it's about is that teachers have to have dress codes because we don't know how to dress in school. In the midst of all of this, that's what that national newspaper thought needed to be publicized.
So
it really underscores your point to me.
Yeah, it is just. I started Education Now because, you know, I wanted to bring this out because I saw that it was not, and while my kids were growing, I couldn't take it on. But once they were, you know, on their own And I felt like this was really what I needed to do. And it's just been so heartbreaking to me that there are experts out there that any of this media could go to really find out what children, you know, need in their child growth and development. What are the models that are working? You would think that would be the logical place for the administration to go. It was hard for me to see Joe Biden hugging Rhea.
Yes,
that was hard.
That was hard for a lot of us. Yes.
Yeah, and so it's maddening to me that we have this education system that's the model for the world in terms of a university system, and the experts are in it. There they are, you know, in neuroscience and in child growth and development, and the media doesn't go to them. They go to Bill Gates.
Yes.
They go to celebrities.
Yes, and then when you have someone like Diane Ravitch, who was a supporter of some negative impact policies, but who for the last whole bunch of years has been in the forefront of helping people to understand pedagogically why those things are wrong and why they are counter to what children need. What kind of attention does she get now compared to what she got when she was promoting the Bush policy on
No Child Left Behind?
Yes.
It took a while for me to warm to her because of that. It was like, I don't know. I just, you know, turncoats. I mean, you know, how you could even look at No Child Left Behind, and which does not put the child in the center.
Right. Right.
And say you're speaking for children, and now you want me to trust you. So it's taken me a while to warm to her, and I was very impressed with the speech that I heard, the video speech that I heard that she delivered to the delegates there at the convention.
Yes, that is on YouTube, and it's a fun speech.
Right, she was condemning value-added models and charter schools and policy proposals from online learning to school closures.
Yes.
All the big topics. And then I've heard that her book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, you highly recommend.
I do. I sincerely do. In fact, 2 years ago when I was on summer vacation, I was reading it walking up and down a beach somewhere. I had to stop my pacing to make phone calls to read things out loud to some of my colleagues, including colleagues in Chicago, because I was so moved by the depth of her understanding of how dangerous the momentum was then in public education around No Child Left Behind and testing, and how far we had come away from effective teaching and exciting schools. And that was 2 years ago, and back then, it was only the very beginning of the assault. I mean, things have gotten so much worse since then, but I do highly recommend her book, and thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, I have, you know, I listen now, and I will give her some of my, the benefit of the doubt.
Right,
and I have other teachers, you know, who have worked in the public system who really admire her. And, you know, but if there were other people like me who have reservations that a person who was working on policy that involved children and didn't put them in the center, that they would have reservations, you know, I can understand it.
Oh, I can too. Certainly can.
The other thing that really boggles my mind, Kip, is that it got this far. Where were the unions? How did it get this far if the unions were doing their job?
Well, I really think that's an exactly appropriate question, and something that all of us who look to the unions or are involved in the unions really need to have a frank conversation about, because if we are going to survive as a country that has public education and a country that has unions, we have to ask exactly what you are asking. How has it gotten so bad, and where have the unions been? And I think the answer is rich with lots of different examples of things that we should have done and didn't do, and some good stuff that has happened, especially on local levels. But it's of critical importance, and my personal opinion is that union leaderships of most of the, if not all, of the major unions in this country have gotten too cozy with the wrong people. And the idea of actually educating and mobilizing rank-and-file members of unions to carry forward a struggle against those people that they've been cozy with, it's long overdue. And there was some talk of that at the AFT convention, primarily, though, from places like Chicago, where rank-and-filers have done a great deal to remake their union locals and have set a really strong example for us. And that has been such a positive development that the leadership of the union had to acknowledge it. That, in fact, to me, the most outstanding, most wonderful resolution that came out of this convention came in the form of a special order of business that didn't even go through the normal convention channels. Most of the other resolutions were all things that no one could really disagree with, but they weren't stated very strongly. But this special order of business resolution was an exception, and it came through the being added on from the floor, a motion from the floor, and was passed not only unanimously, but with such enthusiasm from the delegates that there were ovations and applause that lasted a long period of time. So much so that Randy Weingarten had to, at the end of it, kind of try and take credit for this motion that she had nothing to do with.
Oh, she had nothing to do with it.
Right. Can I tell you what it says?
Yes. Oh, please,
okay.
Please.
The title of it is, In Solidarity with AFT Educators in Hostile Bargaining Environments Who Are Fighting to Defend Fair Contracts and the Right to Bargain Collectively. And it specifically points out things that are going on in Chicago, in Detroit, in Lawrence, Massachusetts, in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, in Douglas County, Colorado, and calls attention to those struggles, which, as you can see, are geographically very widespread, and the things that they have in common. And then there's just two paragraphs of resolves, two sentences, really. Resolve that the American Federation of Teachers will stand in solidarity with these AFT locals and any others engaged in the critical struggle to advocate for students and their families, for citizens and their communities, for patients and health care, and for our own existence as organized labor, and resolve that the AFT's solidarity efforts will include supporting affiliates in the event of a strike or other actions our members choose in processes authorized by their local union. Educating our national membership and the community about these expanding strategic assaults, engaging members in actions of protest, and promoting this commitment as a battle for the dignity of public service and for the common good. That resolution captured the convention's heart and soul, and it was almost a demonstration on the floor when the resolution came to a vote. It was a beautiful place to be.
Oh, that is beautiful. I'm so glad you shared that, because I hadn't found that. I found that the AFT delegates called for an end to American fixation on high-stakes testing and adopted a new mission statement for the union.
Yes.
And redoubled the union's commitment to putting America back to work, stabilizing communities, and investing in infrastructure and public services.
True. Right.
That's nice rhetoric. I hope there's action on it.
Yes, agree.
And I loved this statement, that it was time to restore balance in our schools so that teaching and learning, not testing, are at the center of education.
Yes.
And President Randy Weingarten took credit for that.
Well, that actually did come from Randy Weingarten and her staff.
Right.
That statement was initiated a few months ago and has been circulating almost in the form of a petition, so it's gotten a lot of support. There was a resolution with a little bit more teeth in it on the same topic that never made it to the floor, unfortunately, but there's enough in that resolution that you just referred to help move us as a union forward in our stance against the high-stakes testing mania.
Right. That I love this. Test-driven education policies continue to force educators to sacrifice time needed to help students learn to critically analyze content and instead focus on teaching to the test.
Yes.
And students lose out on rich learning experiences when districts cut art, music, sports, social studies, science, and other subjects to focus strictly on math and reading tests. Oh,
yes.
I love that. Oh, I love that.
Yes, me too. I think that is an awesome statement. And actually, Randy Weingarten's State of the Union address, which is, I'm seeing, on the AFT website.
Yes.
It's pretty dynamic. I think the sentiment that's echoed in that State of the Union address does recognize the depth of the attacks on public education and the role that the union has to play in supporting those who are being hit hardest and organizing to fight back. And there was a resolution that a couple of resolutions passed to to increase the percentage of national dues that are used in a solidarity fund to help local unions that are taking things on. So there was some very positive movement.
Yeah, I felt it were some positives. And she was, Randy Weingarten was reelected as AFT president, right?
Yes.
Yes. Part of what I picked up from what she said, which I'd like you to maybe expand on, the candidates we are endorsing in many cases aren't perfect, but they do have one thing in common. They have felt the same winds of change that we have, and are attempting to deal with them in a way that honors and respects American working families.
Well, you know, I wish that were as true as they presented. Personally, I found it very difficult to welcome Joe Biden into our convention. I applauded politely, as did my colleagues, with the exception of a few who had a little demonstration that I really think was kind of counterproductive. But here comes a man from the current White House regime that includes Arne Duncan and the Secretary of Education, who has put into place some of the most hideous policies when it comes to forcing teachers to teach to the test in order to be able to keep our schools from being closed and maintain our jobs. The race for the top, I mean, just the, which is a way of funding schools that make it against other schools. To me, the whole idea, when I first heard that term, I thought, my goodness, how am I to applaud my school district getting money because Cleveland or Los Altos or anyone is not getting it? There are so many evil things that have come out of this Secretary of Education, and sure, they can say it would be even worse if Romney were president, and of course that's probably true. But to have the nerve, really, to come and address our convention without referring at once, let alone apologizing to, the actual state of the U.S. Department of Education's assault on us, to me, I found it very difficult. I was very impressed with his wife. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden actually continues to be a full-time community college teacher even while her husband's the vice president. And she spoke to us, and she was a sister. She was right there with us.
That's great.
But he, on the other hand, has a lot in his right, standing right behind him in the form of the U.S. Department of Education that is counter to some of the things that he was getting applauded for at our convention.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually was relieved that the convention wasn't, I was afraid it was going to be almost entirely a rally for Obama that orchestrated from the dais, but that is not what happened.
Right. She says, this is another quote from her, from Weingarten's speech, "We must recognize that President Obama's stimulus efforts in 2009 were a lifeline for public education and public services, and they kept 300,000 of us on the job. The Jobs Act he proposed, which is currently being held up in Congress, would support tens of thousands more. Contrast this with Governor Romney, who would fire teachers and raise class size."
Right, right. Well, there, you know, it's a little oversimplified, isn't it?
Yes.
I believe...
I believe that President Obama is being held hostage, and I know that Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont says the same thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, but would he go further? Would he can Arne Duncan?
Yes.
Would he really be, you know, there for the majority, for the 99%, if he wasn't being held hostage? That's the question.
Perhaps we'll learn that. Perhaps we never will.
Right.
But I think for many of us, the fact that he hasn't fought more diligently and openly and with more determination against the hostage takers, that's been very frustrating. I mean, I think the lack of transparency, the lack of candor, coupled with some other of his policies, which are hideous and really stand in contrast to anything that they're saying they want to do for kids here. For example, the use of drones, the continuing war in Afghanistan, the continued United States policing the world for whom, not for the 99%. That all of those things, his refusal to stand up completely against the tar sands, the environmental destruction, the refusal of the United States continuing to sign on to the major environmental measures that so many other countries have that say something specifically about the future we're trying to leave our children. These things all coupled together make me very frustrated with the idea that we should trust these guys to lead us forward, and that's all we need to do. But then again, no one's saying it just like that, at least not in the AFT right now. It would ring so hollow that it's not being said that way completely.
Well, I just hope that AFT does support the teachers and the students and focuses on keeping the child in the center. If the rhetoric, if action is reflected, you know, by their rhetoric, if they take action on that rhetoric, I will be so happy, and I will because I really want to be able to support unions. I really, my whole life, I felt that that was the way, and it was only when education, when Reagan was elected, and I saw the school system, you know. It was no longer a part of the caring profession. It became a business.
Yes.
That
yes.
I couldn't tolerate it. And I see that all of the caring professions are under attack.
Yes. In
education, the nurses.
Yes.
The firemen.
Right. Right.
All of us are under attack, and that needs to be. We need to recognize that, I really love, like you were saying, you really like Jill Biden. I really like Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want these women to have more influence.
Yeah.
But women are really under attack.
Yeah, that's so true.
And I feel like we're living in Nazi Germany. I hate to say that.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's so much to what you're saying. If the unions don't do what is necessary right now, they're just going to be rolled over. And unfortunately, that's been happening some places. My old union, your dad's old union, United Mine Workers,
yes,
has become such a tiny shell of what it was even 15 years ago.
Right.
And I think part of the reason for that is that, that's a whole other story. But I think certainly right now the AFT and the NEA have probably the challenge of their lives in front of us right now. That is, if we do not stand up quickly and in a united way and firmly in support of our children and our communities and our schools and against those millionaire boys clubs that and the government agencies that are doing their bidding, that are trying to circumvent and destroy public education, if we don't do it firmly and honestly and consistently, then really we're done. We're done. If we don't form alliances with the black community and the Hispanic community and the immigrants who are trying to get a decent education for their families, and all of those who are facing the same kinds of attackers in all aspects of their life, if we're not right there as a part of that, then we're doomed.
Yes.
On the other hand, the door is open to us. We have right now an opportunity to join hands with those others who are under the same attacks that we are on behalf of our kids. I mean, What more exciting prospect could there be on behalf of the children to cross all the old lines that may have kept us from one another and to join hands in a way that can make those that are trying to crush us realize they can't do it? And I hope your listeners are paying attention to Chicago, because the Chicago Teachers Union, in my opinion, has done an incredibly fine job of doing the kinds of things that I think will keep us going under horrid circumstances. I mean, look at there in Chicago. That's Arne Duncan's old territory, with a mayor and governor that still are beholden to Arne Duncan, and they're reaping the legacy of all the attacks that Arne Duncan led against his schools in when he was superintendent in Chicago, and they're continuing to worsen, and Arne Duncan probably has the back of the mayor there, and yet the teachers have been able to win victories against all of that because of the incredible solidarity they have built among themselves, with their kids, and with their communities. And you can always get a shot in the arm, I think, by looking at the webpage of the Chicago Teachers Union, or for Facebook users to go to their Facebook page. There's wonderful stuff happening there.
The Chicago Teachers Union.
Right.
Their website and their page, their Facebook page, Kip is recommending, and I'm certainly going to check it out for sure. I have kept an eye on many articles coming out of Chicago, and I am totally in solidarity with them. And I do feel that the parents, many parents do not know the power that they have. These are not the state's children.
Right.
And unfortunately, the people who need to realize that are the people who are in poverty.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be empowered with this so that they take control of their community and their schools and put their children in the center. That's such a heartbreaker to me that they're the disappeared.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I know that when my father, during the 60s, during the time of Martin Luther King's march and John F. Kennedy's presidency, he would go to union meetings and he would come back so discouraged because they would be talking about how those black people, but of course they didn't use that term,
right,
were going
right.
to take their jobs.
Yeah,
and he would come back and he would say, I cannot believe that they have such short memories, that they forget when they were the other.
Yeah.
And and then, you know, and then, oh, you know, we can't support JFK because he's a Catholic. And, you know, he would just become so frustrated with that kind of logic. And so I feel that that's another problem, is the lack of education after all of this time of and it's almost like Jim Crow is back, you know. Let's keep these people of color in ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the middle class, let's not offer all of this to their children. Noam Chomsky does such a great job of talking about how after the 60s, with all the protests and the empowerment of students, that's when they started charging tuition. There was no need to charge tuition.
That's fascinating.
And so that then you create all this debt, mm-hmm. and then these children spend a lifetime paying off this debt, and they don't have time to protest. Oh, it's excellent. I will send it to you, Kip.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And let me recommend, as a parallel to what you're saying, two things. One is the Zen Education Project.
Oh, yes.
Which is, to me, I'm an English teacher, but, of course, English involves everything, and I try and help my students get a sense of our real history as we're reading historic fiction, and I know that it's getting harder and harder for people to get a hold of, or for curriculum to recognize the role of common people in making history, and therefore the real history of our country and of the world. But the Zen Education Project, both their website and their Facebook page, there is so much good information there, and I agree with you. I mean, if we don't know that history, like what Noam Chomsky was talking about, we are less armed than we could be with the information, the knowledge, and the historic examples that can help us so much now. And there's another thing I'm just looking right now as we're talking, talking about parents. There is a wonderful organization called Parents Across America, which has a also an excellent website and an excellent Facebook page. And unlike some of the organizations that claim to be for students and like Students First, et cetera, this is a real organization of parents that has been fed up also with the teaching mania, the testing mania, and with the closing and attacks on public education. And they say on the part of their opening statement, they're an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit, grassroots organization that connects parents and activists from across the U.S. to share ideas and work together on improving our nation's public schools. They're committed to bringing the voice of public school parents and common sense to local, state, and national education debates.
Yay!
Yes, and it's a wonderful organization. I really strongly recommend checking out their website, too. It's just parentsacrossamerica.org.
Yes, I'll check it out, Parents Across America. It's so difficult because there are some organizations that have that, you know, that great title.
Yes.
But they're really counter the child-centered education. Can we talk about some of those?
Certainly.
You mentioned one of them.
Students First, Michelle Reed's group.
Students First. Yeah, listeners, listen up. Students First, that is not really putting students first.
Absolutely not.
And then do you know any others?
Well, certainly ALEC. Anything that's connected with ALEC, the American Legislative, what is it, ALEC?
American Legislative Exchange.
Yes.
Right.
They keep cropping up, these insidious organizations like Students First.
Right. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No, I want you to go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Get to hear me all the time.
Okay. I should have at my fingertips a list of the organizations. I don't, and I apologize for that.
That's right. Democrats for Education Reform?
Oh, yes, exactly. That's an extraordinarily important one. And it's strange how some organizations, you can go to their websites and look at, click on something like who we are, like what I'm looking at, a Parents Across America page, and others, they tend to hide who their funders are.
Yes.
And the big foundations that are funding so many of these different groups, even in Pittsburgh, a group called A-Plus Schools, which began as an organization that looked like it was supporting public education and is now supporting Michelle Rhee. These foundations have lots of money, and the Broad Foundation is one of the most insidious. The Koch brothers, of course, anything that they fund. Even the Bill Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which poses as a liberal alternative to some of these others, their hands are far from clean, too.
Yeah, I have a very difficult time with Bill Gates because he doesn't go to the experts in the field of child growth and development. He doesn't respect teachers.
Yes.
I was so disappointed in him. I really am. So hard. And then is this organization called Children First?
Yes, I think I'm not completely familiar with them. My sense is that they're a similar problem organization. I could be wrong, though. I need to check them out.
I wanted to ask you that because when I saw them on a list, while you were talking, I found my list. Mm-hmm. They're from one of the teachers there at the Teachers' Letters to Obama had put out, which is a website, listeners, and. And I saw Children First there, and I thought, gee, is that is that like Children and Families First, which we think of here in my community anyway, is really a helpful organization for families.
Yeah.
So is Children First part of that? And so I will try to research that out. But when I did, as you said, it was very hard to find out who the funders were.
Yes. Right.
Just this feel-good language. So here parents are going to have to realize that there are organizations like Parents Across America that they can trust.
Right.
Or the Chicago Teachers Union.
Yes.
That they can trust. But there are these other organizations like Stand for Children and Democrats for Education Reform and A-plus Schools, which you just told us about, that they cannot trust to put their best interest in the center.
Yes.
And we just don't know about Children's First. But
I'm looking at, there's several different Children's Firsts I see. Some local organizations that have specific goals and have been around for a while. And then I'm looking at the national petition to help feed children. And, I mean, the first page of this looks like something that everybody should be supporting, hungry kids and stuff.
Right.
I just don't know. But yeah. I think...
if we find out anything, I will put it in the outro to this interview, Kip.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much.
So if either of us find out anything about Children First, I will include it in the outro.
Thank you. That sounds good.
Is there anything more you'd like to tell us about the conference?
I think I'm still pretty fixated on the excitement that hit the room every time an organization or group that was really working in a collective way with others to try and make things better, anytime that hit the podium, and that happened a bunch of times. The response to DREAM was really inspiring to me, because we know how strong the anti-immigrant rhetoric and campaigns have been, and the horrible things that are going on in Arizona.
Oh yeah.
Against immigrants and in other places, including Texas, to see this whole convention on their feet, applauding this illegal, undocumented young woman who was speaking for people like her, and asking for our solidarity, which was given in their fight to be able to work their way into becoming Americans and to have access to education. It was very inspiring. And people, you know, when the West Virginia hillbillies, I'm saying that with great deal of respect, because I have a tremendous amount of respect for people of West Virginia. But, you know, the term is used derogatorily. When people with those thick hillbilly accents got up to talk about what was going on in their communities, and to seek support for their fights to save public education, and people, again, the whole convention on their feet in solidarity with them.
Isn't that great?
Yes. And during the convention, many of us took advantage of the invitation that was given to us and went out on the streets to demonstrate along with our Detroit brothers and sisters across the street from the person who's now running Detroit. And the demonstration was so strong with all the press there that he agreed for the first time to actually have a conversation with the union. That, you know, those kinds of things, they buoy you.
Yes.
And, our challenge now is to bring all of this home, and this is what we talked about on the bus on the way back to Pittsburgh, bring all of this home and help our members who are overwhelmed right now with the way the attacks are coming down on them, get some inspiration and some sense of strength from what others are doing and linking ourselves up with them. Like here in Pittsburgh, we just had our first massive layoff of teachers and paraprofessionals and other school-based personnel. And we're going back to school not completely decimated, but with a much smaller workforce, with much larger class sizes, and a lot of our members out in the street. And morale could be just completely destroyed by the way that we have to re-enter school. Our job, I think, is to support those people who have been affected by this, which is all of us, but especially those who have lost their jobs and the children who will have more kids stuffed into their classrooms with them and their parents, to support them, but also to take the dynamism that we saw at the convention and reach out here in Pittsburgh to our the people with whom we should be working so much more closely, the black community organizations, some of whom we already have relationships with, all of the parent organizations, the other unions, and the public as a whole that needs public education, and surround our schools with this big, thick layer of solidarity and support so that our governor, Corbett, in Pennsylvania, stops a little bit in this onslaught, and so that we then have the strength to be able to build what we need to build and to reach out and support our colleagues, brothers and sisters around the country. And I want to take this back to something that you started with, because I think it's so critical. What should we really be talking about right now in relationship to our schools? Some people actually said this at the convention. It's not what we should be talking about is there has been some exciting development of what can be done to really educate and stimulate and build self-confidence in our young people. There is so much exciting thought that is happening out there in the world, but it's not what we're paying attention to. It's not. We are in a defensive position just trying to hold on to what we already have and to keep teachers from being fired because our kids don't score okay on these ridiculous tests. It's your spirit and what you think we should be talking about, I completely agree with. And we've got to get to a point where that's the center of conversation, what children need and what they can do, rather than what we're forced to talk about now.
Yes. Yes, it's just the decimation that has gone on, the defamation of character of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted a union, just like many people want a president that it speaks out more, you know, with more power about these issues. I want a union that acts with more gusto for the benefit of the child and for each individual child and for the teachers and families in this country. And I want a media that informs, which is their duty. These airwaves belong to the people, and they are betraying the public's trust.
Yes.
So from every angle, the people are being just put upon, and one of the strengths about Obama was his support of the Dream Act. And so, you know, that I was really happy that was really one of the big pluses when we talk about Obama, and I cannot see any support for the people of color coming from Romney. So even though I'm not 100% behind Obama, I am going to support him.
Yes, completely understandable. Absolutely.
Because I don't think there's going to be any hope.
Right, right.
If Romney becomes president.
You know, I think there's a huge difference between deciding that we have to support and vote for Obama against Romney on the one hand, and on the other hand, and this is not what you're doing, telling people that that's where our hope is, that we have to put all our eggs into the basket of campaigning for these candidates, because once we do that, we're doomed.
Yes, we can't do it out of denial.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can't do it. We have to do it consciously.
Absolutely.
Knowing, you know, looking at the whole picture, looking at all the downs and all the pluses, all the minuses and pluses, not ignorantly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let me thank you for the work that you're doing, because, as you pointed out, the media right now is not exactly giving people the whole story or anywhere near it of what's going on in any area, including education. And what you're doing and what others like you are doing with alternate media, I think is critically important. And I just want to salute you and thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you, Kip. Thank you so very much. I am just so delighted that you agreed to be a guest on Education Now.
It was my honor. Absolutely. Yeah, my honor.
I have just been looking forward to it so much. And I wanted to, before we say goodbye and I let you get back to your life, I wanted to ask you, who were some of your greatest influences?
Oh, my. Well, that's, well, I have to say I have a lot of greatest influences, I think. My family, my heritage is full of fighters, especially female fighters, from my grandparents to my mother. My mother was a Rosie the Riveter and a high school dropout during the Depression who became one of the most self-educated people I've ever known, and was I grew up in the Union Hall that she belonged to, and she was just my example setter and wonderful. But I have to say, if I had to narrow it down outside of my own family, I would have to say my biggest influence has been from the civil rights movement. I was fortunate enough as a high school student to be around as the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was just getting going, as the students sat down in North Carolina in the lunch counters, with the black students asking to be served and being kicked out and thrown into jail. My friends and I watching those things on our little tiny black and white televisions, as high school students in Berkeley, which was then a conservative town, decided that those guys could do it, we needed to do the same thing. And that was the turning point in my life, being inspired by those students and becoming a part of the incredibly wonderful civil rights movement, which brought together people from all different kinds of walks of life, but was led by just some of the 99%, the black 99%, and was able to pull people out of the doldrums and out of our own isolation and into a movement that won some huge victories. I think the civil rights movement runs in my blood today. It helps me to realize that things don't have to be the way they are right now, and that the people who can turn that around are the people next door to us and down the street and in the next neighborhood. And that's my real inspiration, I have to say.
Yes, that's beautiful. I too was very inspired by the 60s and the civil rights movement, and by a gentleman named Mario Savio.
Oh, yes, I was there. I was with him. I was on the streets of, yes, Brown Hall. Yes.
Such an inspiration. Yes. And he ended up, he was teaching at Sonoma State University before he died. Where all of
and his
my,
wife is a library teacher.
Yes.
Which I was for a while.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And I really feel like when they put affirmative action down here in California, mm-hmm. when they voted it down, it broke his heart. Mm. And I know it broke mine. Those were inspirational times. And before Bush stole the election in 2000, the American people were asked what their priorities were. Mm-hmm. And the overwhelming majority of the priorities were civil rights, mm-hmm. the women's movement, and the environment.
Wow.
And those issues are what are being just trampled.
Yes.
They're being trampled. So you know that the American people do not agree with this. This has all been bought and paid for.
Yes. Right.
Well, I know that you recommend a Ravish's book.
Yes.
And are there any other books you want to recommend to our listeners before we say goodbye?
Well, at this point, I just got a message to my daughter. I have to go pick her up from work. So I'm going to say that I think if people start there, they're going to find a lot of good things in many places, and including from listening to your radio station. So. Your radio program.
That's wonderful of you to say, Kip. That is really beautiful of you to say.
And
the book is called The Death and Life of the Great American School System by Diane Ravitch.
Yes.
All right.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful afternoon there.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
okay.
Kip. It was so fun.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so very much to Kip Dawson and all the teachers in public education working so hard to defend their students and their schools. organizations to be avoided that deceptively present themselves as child-centered include Stand for Children, once again, Stand for Children, Democrats for Education Reform, again, Democrats for Education Reform, and A-plus schools. That's A-plus schools. Add to this list charter chain schools run by Gulen Charter Schools. That's G-U-L-E-N Charter Schools. KIPP Charter Schools. Capital K-I-P-P Charter Schools. Rocket Ship Charter Schools. Once again, Rocket Ship Charter Schools, Educational Services of American Schools. Once again, that's Educational Services of American Schools. Their justification for this raping and this pillaging of the coffers for public education is that big publishers such as Pearson, McGraw-Hill, and Houghton Mifflin Harcourt have made hundreds of millions of dollars selling public school districts' textbooks and standardized tests, so why can't they milk the public education cow? A new film, Won't Back Down, Pushing the Parent Trigger, which is an AstroTurf creation not built by grassroots. It was pushed by ALEC and charter companies who want to take over public schools faster. It does not really empower parents except to offer them a choice of which for-profit charter to send their children to. There are no experts in child growth and development or neuroscience or experienced professional teachers supporting this film or this plan. Only celebrity, business, and mainstream media, and that should tell you a great deal. Books recommended by Kip Dawson are The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education by Diane Ravitch, and The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism by Naomi Klein. Websites recommended by Kip Dawson are the Zinn Education Project at zinnedproject.org. No three W's, just zinnedproject.org. And you can find the Zinn Education Project on Facebook as well. Now, as far as contact information for Kip, you can send emails to me at hermes@pacific.net. Or please leave questions and comments on Education Now's Facebook or Google Plus page, and we will see that she gets your feedback. On Thursday, August 30th, Education Now will welcome the return of Belinda Rollins for a focus on the media and education and their upcoming conference. You can listen and download free anytime at the website. And please join us on the Education Now Facebook page or Google Plus page to leave comments and join the conversation. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education. Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at www.amshq.org in the local events pages. That's www.amshq.org. Sending cosmic love to all. This is Athena Melville saying goodbye for now.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.